We may often like to think that Jesus' time was just simpler. You know, they all believed Judaism, they all got along as families, families worked together, society was fine, they figured things out, it worked better. Well, that's not true. And really, if we understood what Jesus was dealing with in his time, we'd realize how similar it is to our own, so that his words, like in today's gospel, still have great merit for us today and teach us how to deal with the many things of our lives. For instance, during Jesus' time, the Roman government controlled the land of Israel. It was like a tyranny. They made it clear that the Judaism could practice some parts of their religion, but not everything, and they were not going to have full authority over their land again. I don't know how you see our government today, but it doesn't feel like that much of a tyranny. We still have a vote, we still can have a say, you know, we still have quite a few freedoms, so, you know, advantage? In that same time, if you got something like a broken leg, or maybe you had a severe cut, that could be lethal. That could be the end of your life. Most of the issues they had, diseases, things like that, were completely incurable. Today, those things are easy to deal with. We have so many ways to help people with such a wide array of diseases and issues, we don't have to worry about that anymore. Yet, in Jesus' time, they still had taxes. There's always taxes. But there's a very big difference between their taxes and ours. In that time, the government sent out tax collectors, and tax collectors took as much as they wanted. And if it was above the amount that the tax was required, they kept the rest, and nobody questioned it, because you're not going to question the government. Today, it might be a complicated form we have to fill out with a whole bunch of nuances, but at least it's at least somewhat just. It's not some extortioner taking as much as they want. So, call it what you wish. Our times are quite different than they are. His times are different than ours. But there's still some basic things that we're wrestling with. How do we hold all these things together? Jesus brings a great point. The Pharisees try to entrap him into thinking that things are so confined and constricted that we have no way forward. This is where our lies are, the lies we continue to tell ourselves, the lies that challenge us and cause us to be disappointed with things. So one of the things that Jesus mentions, and he brings this up quite strictly, is compartmentalization. We're very good at compartmentalizing our lives. We go to school, then we go to sports practice, then we have dinner, then we do homework, then we go to bed. We go to work, we come home, we take care of chores, we have dinner, we do some more things, moment of relaxation, go to bed. That's kind of how our lives are, right? They have a routine, a structure to them. We kind of do the same things over and over and over again. The big question is, where is God? Where is the time for God in the midst of all this? This is our first fundamental lie. We believe that we are too busy for God. There's just no time for him. This is the lie the devil wants to tell us. Because if there's no time for God, then there's no place for God. And God ceases to be important. But here's the challenge. God always provides a way. There's always time. God can flex and move time as he wants. If he wants our chores to go super fast, he can make it happen. If he wants us to draw out all the things of our life to make it feel like we're so immensely busy, it can happen. If he wants to manipulate time so all of a sudden things work out, he can make it happen. That's up to him. Our choice is to believe he can do that. Do we really believe our time is flexible enough that there's always a place for God? That's our first challenge, to believe that God already planned into our day time with him and that everything will work out. The second challenge we have is we believe that we have to make a special space just for God, like that 15-minute block or hour block that's just him and that's all we need. To an extent, that's true. It's really good for us to have that extra time that we can focus on him, really spend time with him, come to know him. But in reality, God can fill our whole day. We can put him wherever we want. We can have every moment of all those compartments I talked about filled with God's grace. Let's say we're at school and we have a test coming up and we're really concerned, or in the midst of the test and it's not going so well. Lord, help me. Or let's say the day is going really well and there's all these wonderful graces. Thank you, Lord, for the graces. Maybe the day's not going well at all. And we're like, oh man, this is horrible. Jesus, help me. Or maybe we're really struggling with a project or something that's going on. Lord, I need your help right now. That didn't take any time at all. It's very simple. And if we did that for all the different parts of our day, we prayed all day long. See, there's always a way. God always provides a way for us. But we think that there's no way. It's not true. There's always a way. The other challenge we have is that we get to prayer and we think, well, that's a waste of time. What did I do? What did I accomplish? Did I finish a project? Did I get anything done? Did my life advance any further? The answer is probably no. And that's the challenge we face. Time spent with God is actually rest. It's not work. It's supposed to be rest. God created an entire day of the week just for us to rest because he knew we needed that just to come to know him, just to spend time with him, just to have that chance to get away from everything else and just be. Now, the fun thing is when we really take a time to realize what this rest looks like, we realize it's fun and invigorating, enjoyable. As I've been leading this series on Catholicism, I've realized something. People enjoy thinking about God. It brings joy. When you get a chance to ponder what it's like when Jesus was a kid, did he stub his toe? Did he talk back to his parents? What was it like to experience a miracle or to see the feeding of the 5,000 or to hear Jesus speak? These are fun things to think about. Guess what? That's also prayer. If we took the time just to ponder what Jesus' life was like, what it'd be like to encounter him, what these stories were like, that's prayer. That's fun. That's a way to engage our minds, but in a restful way. So when we come away from it, we feel rejuvenated. We feel like we have more energy. These lies we have to challenge because they're leading us away from God, not towards him. They're ways in which the devil has twisted our minds to think there's no space, there's no place anymore, or it's just not going to work out. Following from today's gospel, we have another challenge. The same challenge the Pharisees gave to Jesus. There's this belief, and it follows through a lot of our society, that our faith has no place in the public sphere, has no place in politics, has no place outside these walls. What's funny about this is if you were to listen to the media very carefully, you'd realize they like our ideas. They actually want to hear from us. Here's an example. In the show The Simpsons, there's an episode in which Bart gets kicked out of his school and has to go to a Catholic school because no one else will accept him. So as he's in this Catholic school, he decides to become Catholic. Homer realizes through Marge's anger that this was not a good idea. So he goes to challenge the priest. And he goes up to the priest and said, "Father, I don't want you teaching my son your time-tested values." Wait a minute, what? There is a sense, and most people believe this, that our church has tested through time the values we preach. They're not just something we came up with. There's some good to them. And there's a desire, although they don't want to acknowledge it, that these things would lead to a good society, that there's value in them. So just like the Pharisees today, our challenge is always keep the faith out of it. But there's a problem here. It destroys the unity of who we are. If we have to compartmentalize everything in such a way where they have discrete places, we can never be ourselves. We need to be a unity. The great example of what I mean comes from the Mass. After the bread is consecrated, it's held up as one piece of bread to show the unity of Christ. He is one person. Everything he did, everything he said, everything he was, kept that unity. The same thing we desire. After the sign of peace, it's broken to show that Jesus was broken for us. And the held up broken bread, now his body, proves to us that in his brokenness, we can be healed. Through his brokenness, we can achieve unity again, as long as we believe that. That we believe there's value in our unity. We believe there's value in keeping all the parts of our lives together as one. When we do that, we go into the political sphere not scared, not worried, but with a new vigor, that we believe what we say is good and will be helpful to society, that we're engaging everyone in this quest for the truth and what's good and right. The lie is that that's not worth it. The truth is that they need it. So I challenge you, my brothers and sisters, seek towards unity in your lives. Let God be part of all of it. Believe that God wants this, that he has prepared a place for it. He has already set up your lives to allow these things. There's already space for prayer. There's always ways to pray. He always provides a way. But we don't often believe it. So it's time for us to believe it again. In doing so, our lives will have a new vigor, a new excitement, a new joy, a new unity. And that unity will lead us to peace and will lead us to the joy we truly seek. The joy of knowing that God is with us, providing for us every step of the way, and making avenues where we encounter him and come to know him as our God.